Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Judges, chapter 21, the last chapter of the book of Judges. We're going to call this chapter Wives for Benjamin. Wives for the Benjaminites. Our context is this. In our last chapter, chapter 20, the previous two audios, we have seen Israel's war with Benjamin. They basically wiped them out, all but 600 people at the Rock of Rimmon. The reason for that was because the Benjaminites had protected some homosexual or bisexual rapists and predators who had raped a Levite's concubine and killed her, gang raped her. And they wouldn't turn over the perpetrators to the rest of the elders of Israel. And so the rest of Israel, the sons of Israel, declared war on the Benjamites and basically beat the ever-loving Patuki out of them. There was only 600 left. All right, so we go now into the chapter, starting with verse 1 and go through verse 4. Now the men of Israel had sworn in Mizpah, saying, "None of us shall give his daughter to Benjamin in marriage." So the people came to Bethel and sat there before God until evening and lifted up their voices and wept bitterly. They said, "Why, O Lord God of Israel, has this come about in Israel so that one tribe should be missing today in Israel?" It came about the next day that the people arose early and built an altar there and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. Now the men of Israel, the leaders, came to Mizpah. Mizpah is the little town that's right there in the area where the battle was conducted. If you in Jerusalem, you go north, a couple 3 miles, you hit Gibeah. And then you go a couple miles north of that, you hit Ramah. And then you go a little bit further than that, you hit Mizpah. And then you go further than that a little ways and you hit Bethel. And Mizpah is where they gathered troops getting ready to attack Gibeah. Well, where they made their had their assembly to decide how they were going to attack Gibeah and who was going to go first and so forth. So that's where they're meeting. They would retreat to Bethel in order to fast and appear before the Lord and ask the priests and everything about what they were going to do. That was just a little bit to the north. So the men of Israel had sworn in Mizpah saying, "None of us shall give his daughter to Benjamin in marriage." Well, that's the first time we hear of this oath. I might ask a question here. Could we not characterize this oath as a rash oath? Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown tends to agree with that. He says the entering of that oath was, quote, "of a piece with the rest of their inconsiderate conduct." Inconsiderate! They burnt down their cities. They killed their animals and livestock. Most probably killed all their women in the cities. They did kill all their women because the Benjamites didn't have any wives. They wiped out the soldiers. Yeah, that was inconsiderate, all right. Now, Bethel, which is right north of Mizpah, is where I'm going to assume the fasting, the inquiring, the praying, the spiritual stuff went on. But Bethel means house of God, and so some people say, well, the house of God was Shiloh because that's where the tabernacle was. But, of course, not everybody agrees with John Gill, who says that. So we're going to assume Bethel is not Shiloh. The people are up there weeping. Why are they weeping? They just won a fantastic victory. What's to be crying about? Well, they could be crying about the 40,000 Israelites who were slain in this horrible brothers' war. They could be crying for the 26,100 Benjamites who were slain in this war, and which had almost exterminated the tribe. There were only originally 26,700 soldiers. There's only 600 left. So 26,100 of the Benjamites had shuffled off their mortal coil. Seems to me verse 3 clinches the argument as why they were fasting, because they said in verse 3, "Why, O Lord God of Israel, has it come about in Israel that one tribe should be missing today?" So they're crying for the Benjamites they just beat, which is really an amazing thing. So much hatred unleashed. I mean, they didn't need to go out and wipe out every city. They just needed to beat the army, and that would have been proper chastisement. No, they got to burn the place to the ground, burn the whole province to the ground. So when they ask in verse 3, why has this come about? Well, the reason it came about was because of what they had done. So that was, as Adam Clark says, that was a very impertinent question. They had let their desire for justice degenerate into revenge. There was no need to burn the cities and the cattle, and I agree with that sentiment. They did need to do justice on the Benjamites, though. Now, in verse 4, it says they built an altar. This is either in Bethel or Shiloh, depending on your view of what Bethel means there. Well, if it's Shiloh, there's a problem because they already had an altar at Shiloh. So why are they building another one? Well, some people say, well, it could be the old one was being repaired. Well, that's unlikely. The old one had just been used after the initial Benjaminite victories. In Judges 20, verse 26, we see this: "Then all the sons of Israel and all the people went up and came to Bethel and wept. Thus they remained there and fasted. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord." So they had already offered offerings on an altar in, if this is Shiloh already did it. So they don't need to repair an old one. The old one was just fine. Could be a new one was built at Shiloh. John Gill says, who believes that Bethel should be interpreted as Shiloh, he says, especially when you consider the number of sacrifices required, they needed a new altar. I think it's just as easy to say they weren't at Shiloh. They were rather at Bethel. I find it hard to believe personally that Bethel was Shiloh, because Shiloh was a long way away for retreating to after the last battle was lost. I mean, they're on foot. Shiloh, what I think is about 8, 9, 10 miles north of Bethel. We see in Judges 20, verse 26, "Then all the men of Israel and all the troops went to Bethel. They sat there and cried in the presence of the Lord and fasted that day until evening." So that was a retreat after their second day defeat when they lost 18,000 people. That's a long way to retreat all the way up there to Shiloh. So I think it's Bethel. Most of the translations don't say house of God. They say Bethel as a city. Now the offerings that were offered in verse 4, burnt offerings and peace offerings, those are the standard offerings offered. If you're not in the book of Leviticus, but just in general, what are the purposes? Thanks for the victory. John Gill suggests that the offerings were for atonement for the sin and how the war was prosecuted. Maybe, but burnt offerings aren't the usual sacrifice for atonement of sin. Neither are peace offerings for that matter. But I think Gill does have a point here. It seems like the Israelites are kind of sad about their great victory. They're not jumping up and down like most victors do. We go now to Judges 21, verses 5 through 9. "Then the sons of Israel said, Who is there among all the tribes of Israel who did not come up in the assembly to the Lord?" What they're talking about there is who didn't come fight the Benjamites, who didn't gather at Mizpah when we were making our decision to go on the attack. Verse 5 continues, "For they had taken a great oath concerning him who did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah, saying, He shall surely be put to death." So let's stop right here. At this meeting at Mizpah, anybody who doesn't come to the assembly is going to be put to death, we read here for the first time. And also at Mizpah, they swore that they would not give wives to the surviving sons of Benjamin. They wouldn't intermarry with Benjamin. Now, when the oath was taken that anybody who doesn't show up will be put to death, we're going to see that applies to the people of the city of Jabesh-Gilead in just a minute. But it also applies to the Benjamites, because they didn't show up. And so you could say that all that slaughtering of the cattle and the men, the women, the children, the cities of the Benjamites was in fulfillment of this oath. And so therefore they were justified. But then on the other hand, you could say maybe it was a rash oath. They shouldn't have taken the oath in the first place. But at any rate, they had taken that oath, and we're going to see in a minute, by golly, they're going to enforce that oath. Verse 6 of chapter 21, "And the sons of Israel were sorry for their brother Benjamin and said, One tribe is cut off from Israel today. What shall we do for wives for those who are left, since we have sworn by the Lord not to give them any of our daughters in marriage? And they said, What one is there of the tribes of Israel who did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah? And behold, no one had come to the camp from Jabesh-Gilead to the assembly. For when the people were numbered, behold, not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead was there." Now, why had they taken an oath at Mizpah that nobody who shows up shall be put to death? Well, this was to keep the Israelites from shirking the battle. I mean, if you tell me that I'm going to die if I don't come fight, well, I guess I'll come fight. And as I just said, the oath was fulfilled when the sons of Israel wiped out the Benjamites because they didn't show up. Obviously, they were the guilty parties. Judges 20, verse 48 in the last chapter, "The men of Israel turned back against the other Benjamites and killed them with their swords. The entire city, the animals, and everything that remained. They also burned down all the cities that remained." Well, they fulfilled the oath. God bless them. But I tell you, it seems to me it was a rash oath. They shouldn't have taken that kind of oath to start with. At any rate, in verse 6, they're now feeling sorry. Now, they weren't sorry because they went to war with the Benjamites. If you recall, at the prayer time at Bethel, God says, yes, go up. They asked twice in the last chapter, and God said, go up, go fight the Benjamites. So they weren't sorry for that, obviously, but they were sorry for the severity of the prosecution of the war. They had destroyed women, children, cattle, and cities. And that's what they were sorry about. Now, verse 7, what are we going to do, they say? Well, here's some options as to how they're going to deal with the defeated and destroyed Benjaminites. They could void their oath. But some say that was a solemn religious oath. They couldn't void that. But on the other hand, you could argue it was a rash oath, in my opinion, and there were legal provisions for avoiding rash oaths. Well, you could say, okay, these 600 Benjamites that are left don't have wives. Well, they could just go marry heathens, Canaanites. Problem with that is, of course, that was forbidden by the law. So we're going to see what they did here, how to maintain their loyalty to their oath and at the same time provide wives for the surviving Benjaminites. And it's quite clever, actually. It's a little bit clever by half, in my humble opinion. We'll see here in a minute. Now, the question that the elders of Israel asked, what one is there of the tribes of Israel who did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah? What's the motive for that question? Well, I think most probably is to punish those who didn't come to fight. But it could be that the motive was to find wives for the Benjamites. The idea is we'll find out who didn't come up to fight. We'll go kill the men there and we'll steal their virgin daughters, which is exactly what they did. Now, they discovered that the people from Jabesh-Gilead had shirked this battle, had not come. Well, let's see where Jabesh-Gilead is. If you'll look at the Sea of Galilee, come down about, 15 miles or so, and there's a little brook, and I don't know the name of it, that runs into the Jordan River from the east. And if you go east up that little brook, maybe 5 miles or so, you hit Jabesh-Gilead. It's in right across the Jordan Valley from Bethshan, that famous place where Saul met his maker. Later on, we'll see that right at the opening of the Valley of Jezreel. This is what Easton says about Jabesh-Gilead. It's an important place. It's a town on the east of Jordan on the top of one of the green hills of Gilead within the limits of the half-tribe of Manasseh. And in full view of Bethshan, it is first mentioned in connection with the vengeance taken on its inhabitants because they had refused to come up to Mizpah to take part with Israel against the tribe of Benjamin. That's what we're reading about now. After the battles at Gibeah, that tribe was almost extinguished, only 600 men remaining. An expedition went against Jabesh-Gilead. Here's a little foreshadowing here. I'm going to tell you about this in a minute. The whole of whose inhabitants were put to the sword except 400 maidens, whom they brought as prisoners and sent to proclaim peace to the Benjamites who had fled to the crag Rimmon. These captives were given to them as wives that the tribe might be saved from extinction. This city was afterwards taken by Nahash, king of the Ammonites, but was delivered by Saul, the newly elected king of Israel. In gratitude for this deliverance, 40 years after this, the men of Jabesh-Gilead took down the bodies of Saul and of his three sons from the walls of Bethshan, and after burning them, buried the bones under a tree near the city. So this Jabesh-Gilead is where Saul was buried. David thanked them for this act of piety and afterwards transferred the remains of Saul and his son to the royal sepulcher. That's in Jerusalem. It's about 6 miles south of Pella, which is the famous place to where the entrapped Jerusalem Christians were trapped by the Roman armies, the abomination of desolation. When they fled, that's where they went to, was Pella, and so Jabesh-Gilead is about 6 miles south of that. Now, when the Israelites investigated to find out who had not showed up at Mizpah in order to attack the Benjaminites, they found out that none of the people of Jabesh-Gilead were among the living people at Shiloh or Bethel, where they were looking. None of them were among the slain in the battle, and none of them were even on the muster roll taken before the battle. They were nowhere to be seen. So we read now in Judges 21, verses 10 through 12, and the congregation sent, that's the leaders of Israel, sent 12,000 of the valiant warriors there to Jabesh-Gilead, and commanded those warriors, saying, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead with the edge of the sword, with the women and the little ones. This is the thing that you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every man and every woman who has lain with a man. And they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man by lying with him, and they brought them to the camp at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. Now this striking down of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead is according to the oath that they had made, which we read about in Judges 21, verse 5. The sons of Israel said, who is there among all the tribes of Israel who did not come up in the assembly of the Lord? For they had taken a great oath concerning him who did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah, saying, he shall surely be put to death. So the Israelites are enforcing their oath here. Again, whether it was a good oath or a bad oath, a rash oath is not stated. And I wonder whether that oath to kill everybody, does that include the women and the children too? Well, if they were duty-bound by oath to kill the other women, and I don't see that, I don't see how you can really prove that, but if they were going to kill the women, Why didn't they kill the 400 virgins, too? Didn't they deserve to get killed just like the married women did? John Gill says it's not easy to answer that question. Here's some options on how you can answer it. Necessity excused the violation of their oath. Or, another option, perhaps the leaders of Israel felt that they had a dispensation from the Lord. He's going to let us get by with this and let these young virgins go. Seems to me you could just say, where in the oath does it say we're supposed to destroy the women? I mean, the oath was concerning the soldiers who didn't show up at Mizpah. Let me read that again, Judges 21:5, for they had taken a great oath concerning him who did not come up to the Lord at Mizpah, saying he should be put to death. Well, the women weren't supposed to, and the children weren't supposed to show up at Mizpah. So I don't see how that oath includes the women. So I just think this whole thing was expediency. We need some virgins for the 400 Benjaminites who don't have a wife yet. Now, these 400 virgins were brought not to Bethel, but to Shiloh. And so some people say, well, that proves then that the big meeting was at Shiloh, not at Bethel. The meetings where the praying and the fasting and the sacrifices and the political decisions and all was happening at Shiloh. And that's a good argument. I still think it was at Bethel, though, not Shiloh. This Shiloh that is mentioned is stated as being in the land of Canaan. Why? Well, that's to show that they're going back across west, across the Jordan River. Jabesh Gilead is not in Canaan. It's in Gilead, east of the Jordan River. We go now to Judges 21, verses 13 through 15. Then the whole congregation sent word and spoke to the sons of Benjamin who were at the rock of Rimmon and proclaimed peace to them. Benjamin returned at that time, and they gave them the women whom they had kept alive from the women of Jabesh Gilead. They were not enough for them, and the people were sorry for Benjamin because the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. Now the rock of Rimmon was where the 600 survivors of Benjamin had holed up in for 4 months, and the Israelites kind of left them alone. The rest of Israel left them alone while they went down to burn down the Benjamite cities. They were probably hiding out in there, sneaking out at night, getting food. The Israelites couldn't smoke them out of there. They didn't have gunpowder. They couldn't get them. But now they said, hey, we got some wives for you. Peace. We proclaim peace. We come in peace. We've got some wives for you. Now, giving those wives to the surviving Benjamites, there was only 400 wives, 600 surviving Benjamites, but giving those 400 wives to them did not violate their oath to provide, not to provide women to the Benjamites. We read about that oath here in Judges 21:1, the first verse of this chapter. The men of Israel had sworn an oath at Mizpah. None of us will give his daughter to a Benjaminite in marriage. And then verse 18, which we haven't gotten to yet, a few verses later, it says, but we can't give them our daughters as wives, for the Israelites had sworn anyone who gives a wife to a Benjaminite is cursed. Well, so how do the sons of Israel avoid that oath that they took not to give wives to the Benjaminites? Well, it's because the wives came from Jabesh Gilead. They weren't at Mizpah. They didn't take that oath. So these are being given to you, Benjaminites, courtesy of Jabesh Gilead, not us. Well, you see how we're starting to play games here. Yet there were not enough for them, verse 14 says. That's because there were 600 Benjaminite survivors, only 400 virgins from Jabesh Gilead. Why were the people sorry in verse 15 for Benjamin? Because the Lord had made a breach in the tribes of Israel. The Lord did it, not us. The Lord did it. John Gill says it was done by the Israelites, yet by the permission and according to the will of God and through his overruling providence. Also, we read in the last chapter that when they inquired of the Lord, the scripture says, the Lord said, go on up, fight them. He did that twice. So it was the Lord. He had done it. That doesn't necessarily mean the Lord approved of how his will was executed, because they were a little bit extreme, the Israelites were. Judges 21, verses 16 through 19. Then the elders of the congregation said, what shall we do for wives for those who are left? That's the 200 that are left. Since the women are destroyed out of Benjamin. Well, I said it was only implicit that the women were killed in Benjamin. That verse right there, I am so sorry. That verse right here, verse 16, is explicit. It says that the women of Benjamin are destroyed. They're gone. They said, the elders of Israel said, there must be an inheritance for the survivors of Benjamin, so that a tribe will not be blotted out from Israel. But we cannot give them wives of our daughters. And that's because of that oath. For the sons of Israel had sworn, saying, cursed is he who gives a wife to Benjamin. So they, that's the elders of the congregation, said, behold, there is a feast of the Lord from year to year in Shiloh, which is on the north side of Bethel, on the east side of the highway that goes up from Bethel to Shechem. and on the south side of Libnah. And verse 17, the sons of Israel are so concerned that a tribe not be blotted out from Israel. They seem to understand that Israel was Israel. The Benjaminites were not a Canaanite tribe. They were part of Israel and were part of the land promises and the offspring promises that Israel would be a blessing to the nations, the Abrahamic promises. And so they were feeling bad about that. John Gill says that if Benjamin went down, Jacob and Moses would be wrong. Well, I went back and looked at Jacob's prophecy over Benjamin. Benjamin will be like a lion tearing things up. I don't know how that, you know, that could be true, but only temporarily. I'm not sure how Benjamin being blotted out would break a prophecy anywhere. Maybe it does, but I don't know where it is. John Gill didn't give any scripture to back up his claim there. But whether it would destroy fulfilled prophecy or not, would destroy the fulfillment of prophecy or not, it did violate the sensibilities of the rest of Israel. They knew that Benjamin was their brother, and they were, and Israel was part of the tribes of Israel. So they're feeling real bad about this victory of theirs. So they come up with this idea how to get virgins, the last 200 wives, for the surviving Benjaminites. Feast from year to year in Shiloh, which feast that is unknown. We'll see the Passover or Pentecost or Tabernacles, Feast of Tabernacles. Those are the three famous feasts of Israel. Interestingly to note, all of those feasts were conducted when the vines were in full leaf, which would make it easier to conceal these so-called abductors, kidnappers that are going to kidnap their wives at the festival, which we'll read about in just a minute. Now a little bit of geography. We go from Jerusalem, we go north a little bit to Gibeah, we go north of that, we go to Ramah, we go north of that, we get to Mizpah, we go north of that, we get to Bethel, and then we go north of that, we get to Shiloh, we go north of that, we get to Shechem. That's all on that one road there going up the hill country. One little other place is mentioned, Libnah, which would be north of Shiloh. Libnah means frankincense. It's on the north of Shiloh, near Shiloh. It's on the north of Bethel, of course, and it's to the south of Shechem. That's all we know about it. It's unclear whether the dancing girls, which we're going to read about in a minute, whether they danced at Shiloh or they danced at Libnah, that's close by. We go now to Judges 21, verses 20 through 25, and we'll finish this audio. And they commanded, that's the leaders of Israel, the elders of the congregation, commanded the sons of Benjamin, saying, go and lie in wait in the vineyards, and watch, and behold, if the daughters of Shiloh come out to take part in the dances, then you shall come out of the vineyards, and each of you shall catch his wife from the daughters of Shiloh, and go to the land of Benjamin. It shall come about, when their fathers or their brothers come to complain to us, that we shall say to them, give them to us voluntarily, because we did not take for each man of Benjamin a wife in battle, nor did you give them to them, else you would now be guilty. The idea here is that it's a difference between giving a wife to the sons of Benjamin and having a wife stolen from me to give to the sons of Benjamin. And since this so-called kidnapping that was going on would be a taking, this would not violate the oath which said the wives shall not be given to the Benjaminites. The sons of Benjamin did so and took wives according to their number from those who danced, whom they carried away. And they went and returned to their inheritance and rebuilt the cities and lived in them and lived happily ever after. The sons of Israel departed from, and that's not really in there. The sons of Israel departed from there at that time, every man to his tribe and family, and each one of them went out from there to his inheritance. Well, that's over with. Now the whole book of Judges ends up, and this is a great verse here, verse 25. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. That's how this little story started, if I remember correctly. There was no king in Israel. That's why we have a civil war with Benjamin. There's no king in Israel. That's why we have gang rape and murder going on. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And again, this probably is referring to the time before the judges got started, before there was a judge. That word king can mean a leader or a judge or deliverer. It's sort of a loose word. There was definitely no kings. But it was a fitting commentary, this final verse, for the whole sorry mess of the Benjaminite War. Not to mention the idolatry of Micah and the Danites setting up that golden calf. Just a sorry, sorry mess. Well, on that unhappy note, we have now finished the book of Judges. That prepares us now to enter into a much more happy book, the book of Ruth. We'll start on that on our next audio. I hope you listen to that one, and I hope you enjoyed this one.